Poetry on the Radio. Poetry in and around the ACT. Today, the craft of reading. How some poets ensure that their readings are compelling events. Plus, the Rhyming Bugle. News about poetry around Canberra. I'm Peter Searles. Listening to poetry isn't always easy. It requires a lot of concentration, and it helps if poets deliver their work well. A good reading can include a degree of theatre, or at least rhetorical smarts. At the Poetry on the Move Festival here in Canberra in September 2022, English poet Oliver Cummins proved to be a savvy public reader. Peter Monaghan asked him about how he ensures that his readings keep his audiences tuned in. Let's listen first to some of Oliver Cummins' session.
On Monday, I did go to Floriade. And frankly, I was a little disappointed. I'm going to read you a recent poem called Tulipa Ingens. Ingens is Latin for gigantic. Once again, the tulips have been immense this year, giving the appearance of beanstalks when viewed through the ground floor windows. From our loft on the second floor, you could reach out and touch their sail-like petals, experience the velveteen texture. Those deep colours floated outside, day and night, with pollen smeared onto our windows and walls, scattered in flaky trails over several nearby gardens. A genetic fluke of some kind meant these flowers spent a few weeks competing for light successfully. An old oak and two tired cedars with high canopies were okay, but smaller trees waited in shady silence for the blooms to fade, their limp stems to collapse. The pith of which they were made was too dense to cut immediately, but softened after a little time, when we could hack it into pieces for easy disposal. We planted the bulbs at recommended intervals. Then they swelled in a most extraordinary manner. This year, any shrubs and smaller plants remaining in our garden have been compressed and destroyed, while pressured soil has been moulded into waves across the space where lawn was laid and nurtured. The fence was broken already, a planned removal. But we miss the delicate herbs, our scented borders. In the house next door to the one that I and my family live, my next door neighbour used to have a husband, and she used to recognise me, and she had a whole life. And now she has no husband, and the black dog of dementia has taken her, and she has a carer. And I've been trying to mark some of that process between her and I with a set of poems called My Neighbour's Carer. And I'm going to read a couple of those. The first one is called Black Lightning. And Black Lightning was the fastest ever production motorcycle manufactured in the UK. And there's a famous picture of a land speed record being set on Daytona Flats in Utah by someone riding the bike and wearing just swimming trunks and a crash hat, lying on the bike, which is spectacular. That's not the exact image I have of my neighbour. But Black Lightning. From time to time, the people living next door will change. This month, my neighbour's carer is someone else. She is taller and does not smoke. The French she speaks is more Parisian than that of her Guyanese predecessor, who spoke quietly. Physically, my neighbour does not seem to alter. I see her less often than before, only catching glimpses through both windows, hers and mine. She wore a turquoise cardigan today and hovered in the background, avoiding the light, perhaps. Sitting here now, I find myself struggling to recall the colour of her eyes. They twinkled at me once, as she remembered riding Pillion at great speed on a black lightning. She was hanging on to him for dear life. He was probably her first boyfriend.
Tell me a little bit, Oliver, about the history of your art of reading.
So I think my art of writing is to translate feeling, thought, meaning into language, and for me part of that process is an aural process, that language is an oral tool, and if I can't make the poem work out loud, then can I really make it work on the page? So that informs my practice just in making the poems. The second thing to say, of course, is that I'm someone that loves to get up on his hind legs and declaim and discuss and be a performer and to find an audience and try and help them hear and see what I hear and see and what I think I mean. And I'm acutely aware that that's quite an assumption. So I want to draw the audience in. I want them to feel that there'll be some element of pleasure in coming with me on the journey of an individual poem or a set of poems.
So at one stage in my list of poems for this reading, I had an immense number of railway or train poems, which does remind me that I'm just a boy. Day trip to Brighton. A day trip with six children, four of them ours, and all of us travelling home in a gaggle. I wore that old check shirt with holes in various places and lugged a backpack full of anoraks we didn't need. We'd bought the painting in a promenade art gallery, a small canvas smeared with scarlet, azure and purple loops, each smooth stroke curled into the last, making the shape of a leaf or maybe a heart. The train pulled away towards Stanmore, another 13 stops before reaching its terminus. We were gathering ourselves for the walk to our connection when a count of bags revealed it was mine that was missing. At that moment, I am pretty sure it would still have been resting against the carriage window. My heart, or was it yours, flying solo on the Jubilee line, already gone for what was beginning to seem like forever.
There's an interesting dynamic at play, it seems to me, because on the one hand, you want people to concentrate on the poems and they do require some concentration, but it seems that you almost have to distract them a little bit from that act in order for them to then re-enter that act of listening.
I think I'm trying to distract the other way. I would like them to remove their preconceptions, to be open to what I have to say, albeit for a short while. My poem's mostly short. So just for that brief period, I'm looking for the maximum attention that I can earn. I don't just get it because I want it, so I feel I have to earn it. And yes, there may be jokes, but the jokes are relevant. And what I'm trying to do is pull back the curtains so that they're playing in the same space as me.
There must have been an evolution of that sort of practice. You probably didn't pop into the poetry world fully fledged. What has been the evolution?
Oh, some of it goes back a long way. You know, my family's a theatrical family. My mother was a voice teacher for a 60-year career, nearly, something like that. My father, although he was an economist and worked in commerce, his heart was in the theatre. So I come from a family that's noisy with literature and is interested in, committed to the kind of the theatre of human beings interacting, whether it's in a performance that's dramatic or whether it's trying to be clear and precise about a piece of information or a feeling and trying to give it the best chance of being shared.
Have you consciously developed that? Have you sort of thought, well, if I'm going to give poetry readings, I need to develop something more than just a stock still, stand and deliver kind of approach?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for me, when I go to poetry readings, I want to feel that I'm being given something. That I want to be given a little bit of information, maybe about the poetry, but I want to be given a reason why I'm hearing it rather than just reading it. So, poetry very often is black marks on a white page, but when you bring it to life with a group of people, you're playing with all sorts of other things, with sound, with structure, with the place you're in, and with the fact that you're there together. And for me, the delight of having an audience is a desperate desire to keep that audience. And all of that is part of the show. You know? It's the same as we do when we're standing next to someone else in the queue we may never have met, we may never meet again. But just for a moment, you can make a connection. And sometimes you have to do a little bit more than, I'd like the brown one, please. You've got to go a little bit further. Just to open up what's happening.
I mean, that's certainly true of audiences that don't attend poetry readings a lot, but it seems to work even with poets. There's something so very fresh about that approach. The theatre works.
I do see a lot of poets who I would just wish that they would take some of the same approach. That the poem is not the end, the poem is the vehicle, and you have to deliver it, and you're standing there and delivering, and delivering is one part of it, but communication is two-way, it has to be received.
Let's listen to a little bit more of Oliver Cummins at the Poetry on the Move Festival in Canberra in September 2022. Thanks very much, Oliver.
Thank you, Peter.
Going to jump from the preconceived order about which none of you know anything. Brown leather gloves. These are my father's gloves, with which I am wrestling as I walk down to the station on another crisp morning of frosted cars in a frozen suburb. Who's holding whose hands now? Inside the glove's fingers, there's more of him than there is of me. All those years of rubbed skin. Leather gives a better grip, doesn't really overcome the cold. But it's better than nothing, this thin layer of brown which keeps the weather off. On the platform, I remove one father. Reach out to greet a friend. My other father holds me steady. A number of years ago, I came across a poem in a magazine by Patrizia Longitano, and a line in that poem helped me. I will tell you I saw the priest kissing the organist. And about 8 years later, I was at a reading in London, and Patrizia was there. Anyway, All Saints. And actually, I had to say something about audiences. And I don't need to say any more than the title of this poem, All Saints. It wasn't me as such, kissing the organist, when you slipped through the church looking for your poem. I heard you moving. Detected that hint of a shadow passing through the Lady Chapel. An angel who would normally be here for evensong rehearsal on a Saturday afternoon had called in sick, and the organist who was already having a challenging day, needed some alternative encouragement. Our kiss, therefore, was a purely parochial matter, designed and intended for succour as opposed to delight, although I recognise that an observer such as yourself, determined to uncover the truth of a found image or event, might have been distracted by the sight of a person in a dog collar kissing an organist in a warm but professional manner. On the way to a poetry reading at Keats House, I found this poem. And if you know London, then you'll know that if I was catching this train from Shepherd's Bush, I was running late to get to the reading, which started at 7 p.m. 1842 to Stratford. All the people on this train are beautiful, dazzling and committed. Even the quiet ones who are alighting here at Shepherd's Bush, but especially those embarking for Stratford and points east and north of where we are now at the hub of this gleaming metropolis. The train is full, not packed, and it seems Brad Pitt is among us. It is quite a surprise to see him here like this, travelling cognito, his arms and legs crossed, a little defensively, perhaps, but generally open to whatever the evening might promise or offer. Anyway, no one seems to give a shit about him. We've all been shopping, and we've got better things to do than worry about a celebrity with a travel card. We know you've got it all already, Brad. That's why you don't have any bags. And your boat shoes are perfectly leathery. Right, the next phase of the reading, which is the final phase, you'll be reassured. I've had to take some legal advice, and the final poem, which I really wanted to share with you, I'm unable to. It's a thriller mystery love sequence with a strong geographical location in the Greek islands, but there are also moments in Paddington Station, in West London, and in Stockholm. However, I'm going to focus on the islands. And I'm reading it partly because heat is a feature of everything I'm getting from this audience. Lovely warmth, thank you. But heat is a feature of the poems, and heat has been a feature of the UK for parts of this year. I'm not going to try and explain very much, but if you've ever visited Santorini, then I'm sure everyone in this audience will have gone to Oya, where there's the most marvellous bookshop called Atlantis Books. Calm before. Yesterday, over the port, a setting sun burned late and almost tranquil. Rooftops, scorched by all-day heat, began to cool on terraced apartment blocks, climbing the hillside above an old lagoon. As darkness arrived, so did streetlights, joining rows of gleaming windows, mirrored and flickering in the water. We sat on our balcony, unfolding maps, dressed for no one except each other. The people in this sequence are part of a mysterious organisation, and what they're involved in, you have to decide for yourself. But you may need to read the whole sequence. And the whole sequence, as it currently stands, is available on the bookstore. Rendezvous. On the edge of the main thoroughfare, a statue in bronze is obscured by trees, but stares straight into the middle sea. We wait patiently for our contact, whose special ability to miss each appointed hour is well known. There is a flower bed filled with tough shrubs and a range of succulents whose bright flowers defy the thrum of traffic passing and its fumes. A sudden screech of tyres is not unexpected. The exchange of words which follows is colourful. Your phone rings. It is an unknown number. Another sign our protocols may be crumbling. He has travelled to the wrong island, found himself among people he had not expected to meet again. He will not arrive here until after we have left. It's all about connections and administration.
That was Oliver Commons speaking with Poetry on the Radio's Peter Monaghan at the 2022 Poetry on the Move Festival, held by the University of Canberra. Another poet at the festival who knew how to engage his audience was Ross Donlan, who lives in Castlemaine, Victoria. Here's how he began his reading, and then some of the poems he read.
Well, I was asked to begin with a disclaimer. So we do wish to advise that the following poems are rated M. For a mature audience, I think you're okay. They contain violence, nudity, a sex scene, and strong use of language. 69% of the content has been classified as sentimental, which may cause drowsiness in some listeners and increase the effects of alcohol. If so affected, you should not drive a motor vehicle or operate heavy machinery. If you're pregnant or hoping to conceive, don't listen. We do hope that you enjoy the poems, even that lights flicker on in your cortex, but in the unlikely event of an emergency, please brace yourself by holding tightly to a person near you. Now, you might like to negotiate a partner now, in case a refusal later offends. Oxygen masks will fall from the light fittings above. Please see to yourself before attending to children or the infirm. If it's necessary to abandon a poem entirely, listen for the conveniently placed line breaks and punctuation marks until you hear the last full stop. Then exit by sliding beneath the poem, mind the gap, and fall to the floor. Assume a fetal position and wait for further assistance. Please make sure that you take all your belongings with you. Any ideas left unattended will be taken away and plagiarised. I'll read Piano Tuner. I wanted to have a poem set not far from Canberra, at least. Some of my ancestors came from Murrumburra Harden, and one went to war in the First World War. So this was dedicated to Edward George Lang, who lived from 1896 to 1929. This is a poem about the gaps in a life, though what we don't know about someone in their dash between birth and death. Sent back a cot case, he never returned to Murrumburra Harden, the slapdash town on two hills, creek in between, not even for his mother's funeral, they said, when the wattle and daub life killed her after service on the domestic front. He was raised in a hard stall, they said, known around rate tracks as the runt, the jockey, or a rabbit shooter, that's all. So why wouldn't he get up and go, take off when a parade and drums thumped glory down Albury Street? He'd see the world, roast turkey. But ticks on a clipboard showed more. The rabbits had trained a marksman. 14th of April 1918, Montemarie. Gallantry under fire wins a military medal, the other ranks, military cross. Wounded, but not enough, he's sent back to the front, shot in both knees. A boat with crutches brings him home to no one. But war, never ready to end with peace, follows a soldier like a jealous partner. Their reunion in tumult kills him. Well known locally as a piano tuner, an obit says offhand. 100 years later, the odd phrase tinkles curiously over gaps. hard to understand.
Castlemaine, Victoria-based poet Ross Donlan. We'll hear more from him and from Oliver Commons in future episodes of Poetry on the Radio. Two poets who are skilled at engaging their listeners.
The Rhyming Bugle, poetry news and events around the ACT. Congratulations to Canberra-based poet Jeff Page, who has just been awarded the OAM, the Medal of the Order of Australia in the General Division, in the 2023 Australia Day Honours. Jeff was honoured for his service to literature as a poet. Among his cited accomplishments were his contributions since 1971 as a poet, novelist, editor and biographer, his 25 poetry publications, his poetry reviewing for the Canberra Times and several other publications, and his organising of regular poetry readings at Smith's Alternative Bookshop, University House at the ANU, and other venues since 1994, and of jazz concerts around Canberra since 2003. Jeff Page taught for many years at Narrabundi College and the University of New South Wales at the Australian Defence Force Academy, and has been a writer in residence at several institutions of higher education. As Sally Pryor wrote in a tribute to Jeff in the Canberra Times, if Canberra ever were to have a poet laureate, it would surely be Jeff Page. Speaking of Jeff Page, the next of his Jeff's Poetry at Smith's Alternative takes place on Monday, February 6 at 7 p.m. and features American poet Paul Kane and Canberra-based Moya Pacey. Moya is, of course, a well-known Australian poet whose latest book, Doggerland, Recent Work Press 2020, was runner-up in the 2021 ACT Book of the Year Award. Paul Kane has published 8 collections of poems in the US, as well as a dozen other books, most recently a collection of verse essays entitled Earth, Air, Water, Fire. He lives part of each year in Castlemaine, Victoria. Also coming up at Smith's, on Monday, January 30, That Poetry Thing features Andrew Ritchie and Larice Vera, plus open mic. That Poetry Thing's open mics have a 3-minute limit for each poet, and poets can register to read on the night of the event at Smith's Alternative in Civic. And on February 13, That Poetry Thing features Sandra Renew and P.S. Cottier. Sandra Renew and P.S. Cottier will launch their new book, V8, from Ginninderra Press. Renew's honours include winning the ACT Writers Notable Awards for Poetry 2021 for her collection Is the Sugar Sugar from Recent Work Press. She also took the 2020 ACT Writing and Publishing Award for Poetry and was shortlisted for the 2020 ACT Book of the Year for her collection Acting Like a Girl, published in 2019 by Recent Work Press. That book reflects on gender, sexuality and coming out in the far north Queensland of the 1970s and 80s. Sandra Renew will be, by the way, the guest on Poetry on the Radio next week. P.S. Cottier's book of poetry, Utterly, was shortlisted for the ACT Book of the Year of 2021. In their new book, the two poets reflect on motor vehicles, transportation, and roads travelled. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded Ngunnawal country in the studios of ArtSound FM. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monahan. Special thanks to Annika Grant. Poetry on the Radio is heard each Sunday at 4:30 p.m. and again at 10:30 p.m. on Mondays. Find out more on the Poetry on the Radio page under the Programs tab at artsound.fm. Today's program featured music from the album Nuevo by the Kronos Quartet. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.